From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of December, 2023. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast from Eric Snodgrass at Nutrient Ag Solutions in Agrible. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of Commodity Week. Otherwise, portion of that program, and you can listen to it on many of these radio stations of the weekend, or find it online right now at willag.org, which you can also use to buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up next Friday, a week from today, at the I Hotel here in Urbana-Champaign. Should be a fantastic program. Purchase your tickets now. Don't wait. By the weekend, late registration will begin, and you won't have that discounted early registration price. So make sure that you get yourself registered for the Farm Assets Conference. It's December the 15th at the I Hotel in Champaign.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This morning's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate from USDA changed very little in the S&D tables for wheat, corn, and soybeans. We'll outline those now. In the wheat, it increased the exports by 25 million bushels. That dropped the ending stocks by the same number, so it is now at 659 billion bushels for the carryover. And that raised the average price to $7.30, up 10 cents. For the marketing year. In the corn, a similar function, a 25 million bushel increase in the exports for corn, ending stocks down 25 million, now at 2.131 billion. However, its season's average cash price remained the same at $4.85, and there were absolutely no changes in the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate for U.S. soybeans at 245 million bushels for the carryout and $12.90 on the average season's cash price. Cash prices, actually futures prices in Chicago, finished like this. The March corn at $4.85.5, down 2.5. The May at $4.97.5, down 2, and December 3/4 lower at $5.12.5. January beans at $13.04, down 7.75 cents. The March at $13.23, 7.25 lower, and November down 4 at $12.70.5. Bean meal down $2.10. The bean oil 93 cents lower, and wheat futures in the December soft bread down 10.5 at $6.31.75. And the December hard bread down 4.75, settled at $6.66.75. Live cattle futures finished at $165.72.5, $3.20 lower. Feeder cattle at $215.30, up $5.02.5. The live cattle up as well, sorry, on that one. And the lean hogs at $68.97.5, $1.20 higher. Crude oil for the day at $71.15 a barrel, $1.81 higher. U.S. diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.58, 3 cents higher. And gasoline up about 5 cents at $2.04.9 on the wholesale price. Mike Zuzulo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Let's start with the USDA report. What'd you think?
Well, I tell you, Todd, I was looking for Santa Claus to give me two presents out of this report. I got one of them. They kept the fat cattle price for Q1 above 170. They did drop at $10 from 185 to 175, but that gave us a good enough rally or good enough news fundamentally to give us a rally on Friday. Fat cattle closed back above their major support, drawn off the 2020 low trend line, and feeder cattle actually closed higher on the week. And it was a very messy week this week, so I felt like that was a big win, especially for the sentiment and momentum indicators. And feeder cattle now down about 16% from their high to low, September high to their recent low this week. So they should have done enough damage at this point, given the numbers that I've seen so far. What Santa did not give me in terms of market reaction, he did give me better exports for the corn. He didn't give me as much out of the wheat that I wanted. And the trade didn't react to the report like I wanted it to.
Yeah, so there weren't very many changes. 25 million more exports for corn. I think there were 25 million for wheat, if I remember correctly. No changes at all in the USDA soybean number for WASD. They did have some changes on the global figures. Can you talk about which ones are most important to you?
Yeah, you know, I think the global figures are much better looking than the U.S. overall. The global corn stocks to use ratios and beans stayed the same, 26.1 corn, 29.7, actually down a tenth of a point in beans this month. Wheat also dropped a tenth of a point. Now, that's important to me from a standpoint of, is this rally that we've had so far fundamentally justified? And we are still at a 9-year low on world stocks to use ratios. And we saw the U.S. wheat drop, as you say, on a better demand forecast. And that stocks to use ratio went down 1.8%, which is a pretty big drop in month over month. I think the biggest problem that I have with wheat right now is the technicals. And we have a Federal Reserve meeting on the 12th and 13th next week. But the technicals would show, in my opinion, a weekly electronic continuation chart gap at around that 577, 578 area. I really don't like gaps in charts with the way the funds trade nowadays. So that's probably what I'm looking at. I would jump over into the soybeans and say that's probably where the trade was most disappointed. I was disappointed as well. Even though this, as you say, was a cotton, sugar, citrus briefing for December, I think the weather has been bad enough in Brazil, and it looks like it's going to stay bad enough in center west Brazil, Mato Grosso, that they should have come in and matched up with CONAB a little bit better. They did on beans, but they left corn alone, and CONAB now is 11 million tons lower than what USDA is at, and I think that really opens up the door for pretty big changes in January at this next 10 to 14 days does the damage that it could in Mato Grosso.
I read through the CONAB analysis of their changes yesterday morning. They were out then. And they simply said what most have been talking about, and certainly what you and I have talked about on occasion here, is that the late planting is likely to have an impact. And they also made note that there was a 7.5% reduction in the first crop corn. USDA looking at it and saying we're not ready to commit to that. That 11 million tons, that's a big gap.
That's a big number. You're right. That's a big number because, you know, you're talking about a world-ending stocks figure that's not that ample in either wheat or corn. And the trade's been in this pattern of buying back their short grain positions and liquidating their long protein positions like we've talked about in the past. I don't see that changing, especially with them at a 3-year high when it comes to net short positions in corn futures and options for managed money. I really do think that the corn has the best look to it. Some of the basis levels are improving as well now that we're out of harvest. And I felt like the demand side of the equation was very strong this week with maybe China even buying corn today. We've been hearing about it. There was an unknown corn sale today. I'm guessing it was them because Mexico usually announces that it was Mexico that did it.
I think both USDA and CONAB pointed to China as needing more corn or coarse grains. One of the two, probably both, if I remember correctly. That's got to be at least supportive to the market over the long term.
You know, I think it can be, but I also noticed in today's report, and you bring up a big point, we didn't change the exports in soybeans. Fortunately, we didn't go down, but we didn't go up, and yet China's imports were increased to 102 million tons, a 2 million metric ton increase. So that suggests that South America is going to get that business or Russia is going to get that business. That's a big issue, as was the fact that USDA did manage to bring in Ukrainian corn, pop it up, and also increase exports. I felt like that was kind of a surprise, given especially how they're going to get it out the door, because we know they're 25 to 30% behind last year in export pace. And it seems to me, both in the Middle East and in Russia, Ukraine, conditions are worsening. We had another big grain hit or a sizable grain hit near Odessa this week. So I don't know how USDA came up with that. I'll be interested to see some of their monthly reports that'll come out here in the next 5-6 days.
Yeah, on that note, for the soybean exports, a difference of opinion between CONAB and USDA on that one, because CONAB said not as many exports from their nation, from Brazil to China this this time around. Actually, I think it was just in total exports, but most of them go to China, I suppose. And USDA saying a different story in their opinion. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. I think USDA also made note that part of that difference was a bigger rapeseed production across the planet that might take up some of those oil seeds exports or in the marketplace. So turn your attention back to something you mentioned earlier about next week. Of course, the Fed will be meeting. They'll talk about inflation, interest rates, and I want you to put that in context of the macroeconomics.
The Chinese data this week was not supportive for China coming in and seeing their domestic consumption improve. And so they're becoming more heavily reliant upon stimulating their own economy and more heavily reliant upon soothing the trade relationship with both us and Europe. And so that's the good news coming out of this month so far. The Chinese currency has reacted to that. Other emerging market currencies like the Brazilian currency has reacted favorably to that as well. The Federal Reserve, if the market has built in a Fed rate cut by the middle of next year and the Federal Reserve says anything to the contrary, I would be nervous that the bond yields would start to go up. That would trigger a dollar rally, and it would maybe take down and spill the blocks, the building blocks that we've been able to build up here these past 2 or 3 weeks. So that's why I see it as a very important report. I'm also watching the Japanese yen and the yen carry trade. That has a lot of historical significance in my research to how the corn market trades. If the yen strengthens, traders do the yen carry trade and they get typically into riskier assets. Corn tends to be part of that riskier asset. So I'll be watching that as well because of the Fed coming out too.
And finally, one last topic, biofuels, agricultural energies in general. This one related to crude oil production. I think OPEC, or at least part of the members, are wanting everybody to sign on to lower production. What impact does that have?
I'm glad you brought that up, Todd, because I didn't know if we'd have enough time, but this is going to be a big deal, I think, as we go into 2024. We've got, as I said, the Middle East heating up, and now the OPEC head is saying Friday. He's just saying right now, he's telling the rest of OPEC Plus, reject the COP28 language. It seems to be, to me, that new East, new West trading block friction that we've talked about over the past year, it's really coming to a head. And I think that's where, with this sell-off in the crude oil market, it would not take much, I think, to ignite a pretty decent short covering rally. So I think that's where crude oil has been kind of out on its own little orbit, not providing support to the grain markets. It may come back in here in the not-too-distant future because of the geopolitics.
Thank you much.
Thank you, sir.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Find him and listen to him again on our website, willag.org, willag.org, where you can buy those tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. Don't wait, right now at willag.org. On this Friday, let's check in now with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Thank you for being with us today. Eric, let's begin in South America. I know you watch different models. Over the short term, are there unique things that have happened with those models?
Yeah, there really has been, Todd. And this is going to be something that I think that at the end of the weekend is going to be a pretty big story going into next week. So here's what's going on. You know, we know that things are dry. Parts of the Cerrado getting up into Mato Grosso, they have had a top five driest November on record. Some places have really missed out on a lot of precipitation. And we've heard some of the local, you know, reports of some pretty rough looking crops there. But then you go just a little south of there and there's a bit of a garden spot somewhere in south central Brazil. Then you go much farther south and we've had too much rainfall and we've had delays in planting there. So what have the models been doing? Well, we have a flagship model run out of Europe called the ECMWF. We have a flagship model run out of the United States called the GFS. And what's happened is for the last month is the GFS is predicted too wet. The GFS is predicted too dry. The European model is predicted too wet. So the wisest thing would have been to blend them. But you always wonder, well, is one going to be more accurate than the other? Well, the big story is that in the last, 24 hours, each new model run that's come in from the ECMWF, which has been the wetter model, the wet biased model, it just went really dry. Talking like really zapping a lot of precipitation. Maybe chances of getting under an inch in the next 10 to 15 days are pretty high. Remember, that's borderline, you know, major drought expansion in parts of Brazil. So what's the end story? Well, if that model, the one that's been so wet, is now going over dry and the GFS stays dry, we have a pretty strong signal that moving toward the middle of this month and maybe approaching the third week of December, we're heading the wrong direction to see some big crop numbers out of Brazil. Now, you and I have been talking, right? The markets seem to be in this mode of, prove it. Let's really see if there's actual problems before we start doing a reaction. Well, I think if we don't see changes in the near term, those reactions are going to start to show up. So here's the big story when it comes to these forecasts. Week three, that would be the week from the 21st to the 28th of December. Both models went back over wet. So here we go, dry next 2 weeks. Week three, they go over wet again. And so we're sitting here scratching our heads going, well, they really screwed this up in November. What trust do we have in them to make this call? So I'm going to boil all this down for you in one simple statement. If the rains fail for that week between the 21st and the 28th, I think we're getting to this point now where we won't be able to recover higher yield numbers and better production numbers simply because that's too late in the season to have such, you know, dry conditions that even if it rains really well in January, we can't make up for some of the yield losses, which means the numbers will continue to come down, the adjustments will happen, and we'll probably start to see some sort of a price reaction that a lot of folks have been waiting on. So that's it, Todd. That's my long story about the model battle that is in Brazil right now. And it's been frustrating to watch it day after day change, but that's my job. And so I'll report to you what I know.
Do producers in Brazil get to blame El Nino?
They would like to. But the reality is that a lot of this isn't really driven by El Nino. I mean, El Nino does give you a slight worry about a drier bias to the north, but we've got other factors at play there. And this El Nino is likely right now at about its peak, which would be climatologically consistent when El Ninos do peak. But remember, it's about half the strength, I think, that some of us feared it could have been at this point in December. And so we just question whether or not it's going to continue to be a factor. And since it's fading now, let me rephrase that. Since it's peaking now and then going to fade through the rest of winter into spring, what do next years look like when you have a fading El Nino? And I'll just throw this out there so we can keep thinking about it for the next 6 to 9 months, but it tends to be okay in Illinois. We tend to do all right in years following El Nino events, but that's jumping pretty far ahead.
If you could have that El Nino make sure that we don't have very much snow that I have to move this winter, that would be good. Thank you. Speaking of which, what does the forecast look like for the United States?
Well, you know, I'm glad you didn't call me on Monday, because on Monday we had some pretty good evidence that there might be a decent shot at us getting some snow this weekend here in Illinois. And then just like with South America, we saw the models trend very quickly away from that. And now we're looking at maybe a chance for some precip today. There's some severe weather south of us, way down in the lower Mississippi River Valley. But then, honestly, the system really takes off farther to our east than over us, and no snow, at least in the forecast for most of the folks that are listening to us right now. So that was a kind of a miss and a whiff. And then we go back over mild. And the reason is all of the really, really cold air is currently locked up in Russia. Now, how long is it going to be there? I'm talking temperatures. Now, get this. Temperatures in Siberia that are 35 degrees colder than average. You know what average is in Siberia in December?
No.
Some places it's like minus 20 is the average high temperature. So we've got some brutal.
Oh, yeah, but it's a dry cold.
Yeah, whatever. That cold air is going to have to come around at some point. We're starting to see some evidence of that, but maybe not until the very end of 2023 and the start of 2024. So you asked about snow, and I'm just going to tell you this, Todd. I've been asked to kind of put a phrase on what I think winter is going to be. I think winter for the Midwest is going to be a back half loaded winter, which means mid-January through March is when we're probably going to see the biggest risk of having storm systems that roll through that can either bring snow or rain. And as I told you the last 2 weeks, man, I want a bunch of them, and I want them to be nasty, because we have got to do as much as we can to undo our longstanding drought issues with the soil moisture being so low right now. So that's an earful, Todd, today, but all these things are front of mind for me, and we're trying to just get them all balanced out before we flip the calendar.
Oh, fine. I was hoping for like 2, maybe 4 inches of snow, then turn cold so it can just stay around. I get it moved off, you know, a little heat on the cement and or the driveways. I get everything cleaned off, then go cold so it just stays. But one after another, if we need the moisture, so let's do that.
Yeah,
let's do that.
It's, you know, it's funny. When I put out a forecast for snow, I get equal responses with people being angry at me that I forecast snow, and then people are so happy that snow's coming in. So sometimes I don't even want to mention it just because somebody hates winter and someone loves it. And we live in Illinois, so we get the full variety of everything winter can throw at us.
I like where we live just because it comes and then it goes and then it comes and it goes. That's fine with me. I think that's what I grew up with. So that's right. Hey, you have a good one. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Ackerbull joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you can buy your tickets today. Don't wait, because the price will go up by the end of the weekend for next Friday's Farm Assets Conference. We hope you will join us at the I Hotel in Champaign on December the 15th.